Welcome back to 3 Point Firefighter. Today's guest is BJ Breacher. Now, BJ has been in the fire service for over 15 years. Now, he's a veteran spanning volunteer, private EMS, part-time, and career roles to include wildland and structural firefighting. He's currently a firefighter, advanced EMT, in the DeForest Windsor Fire and EMS Department in DeForest, Wisconsin. He's a lieutenant for the City of Verona Fire Department in Verona, Wisconsin. And he is also a board member for the Brew City Fools. Away from the fire service, he loves to hunt and fish. He likes to work on his ATV. I guess it stays broken because he works on it. That seems like a loop thing to me. Don't know. He stays fit for duty. He's in good shape. He is in good shape. He's not in Jake Barnes good shape. I did like 4 push-ups the other day. I mean, obviously not in a roll and not the up part. Just that it's not important. And he loves to spend time with his girlfriend, Michelle, and her 2 sons. And with that, BJ Breacher. Today's episode is brought to you by Fire Facilities. Make training count with their custom-made, all-steel live fire training facilities. Their made-in-the-USA towers and burn rooms are the best for preparing, responding, and surviving the challenges you face every day. So what'd you do the acquired structure, the training you did?
As I mentioned in my my message to you, I thought it was very ironic that you brought up the searching off the line thing with Shepard the other day. And what we did is we've been slowly working on these things over the course of the past 3 months. A little background: my shift, there's 3 of us. And we are a medic service. I'm an advance. I'm a medic. But the 2 guys that are on my shift are medics. One's a very good, well, they're both very good medics, but one teaches at the technical college. And the other has been with the department for a while. And they're kind of green on the fire side. And full disclosure, I was not happy being moved from A shift to C shift because I had a bang up medic who was actually a pretty solid firefighter too. And then we had another guy on shift that was pretty decent, but I wasn't very happy being moved to this green shift. So I'm like, oh Christ, you know, and not that they weren't bad guys. It just, you know, I want to be with the A team, you know? But I'm just like, and I had a meeting with my union rep and my chief, who ironically, my union rep was also the medic on the original shift that I was on.
Kind of awkward. But I was going to say, it's a little awkward.
Yeah. But I'm just like, I don't want to make this move. And right now we're a smaller department. So for me to go into the chief's office and talk shit with him, it is not a stretch at all. But I felt that, you know, they just decided I was being moved. And I'm like, okay, this is some kind of bullshit. You couldn't sit down and say, hey, BJ, this is what we're thinking. How do you feel about this? Right. And
I want to ask you something in a minute after you get done with your story. You're reminding me of something.
I was told I was being moved because there was another move that was going to be made, but there was personality conflicts with the other shift. And I'm like, that's not my problem. Okay, those 2 children need to work their bullshit out. That's not my problem. And then it was brought up, well, we need somebody with a strong fire background on that side, which at one point I'm like, okay, now you're just jerking me off to make me feel better about this move. But in reality, I looked at it, I'm like, oh, okay, he does have a valid point, but I'm still not happy with this. And I don't know if you want to call it a moral victory. He's like, okay, well, I'll think about it, which I know my chief. That means no, just like leather helmets. He was going to think about it and he said no. So I knew that was coming. So with that being said, I went over to the shift, and that shift to come to a happy ending has become my project. It really has. And it's become my passion project because number 1, I found out, or I had the vibe, they haven't come out and said it, but I think these guys were like, boy, we really wish we knew more about the fire side, but we don't know who to talk to here. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I've got kind of a reputation of being an asshole. Okay. And 2, of being a hard charger. So I think they were kind of concerned about that too. But I will say that anyone who works with me doesn't take long to figure me out. I'm an asshole, but I'm not a jerk. Okay, if that makes sense.
No, no, I love where you're going with this.
Yeah, and I have a coaching background. So I took an opportunity to look at their side of things. Like, okay, these guys have Fire One, and some things have been said about these guys in the past on the Fire side. Okay, you know what? This is my shift. This is going to be my passion project. This is, I want to put together a really good shift. And after about maybe, I don't know, maybe about a month of doing stuff on my own, I'm just like, one day I'm like, hey guys, so what do you guys got going on today? Well, I got this and this and this, and they've got their own responsibilities at the station. I said, I tell you what, at about 2 o'clock, we're going to go out in the apparatus bay and we're going to pull a line, and we're not going to spray water. I call it a quick hit drill. We're just going to hook up 100 feet of the hose. We're going to charge it. We're not going to spray it. And we're just going to pull it around stuff as a crew. And they were very open to that. And then like the following shift, we did something else. And then the thing just kind of snowballed, where all of a sudden they're coming to me asking questions. Mm-hmm. And then they were sending me email messages like, hey, I saw this on Facebook. What do you think? And this thing just started snowballing. And it really turned into something very special, in my opinion. So yesterday, and we've been going out to these acquired structures. Like, we spent Christmas Day turning windows into doors, mm-hmm. and then opening the floor up and doing a RIT scenario with a 2-to-1 pulley system for pulling people out of a basement.
Okay, nice.
Yesterday, we worked on the search off of a hose line. The cool thing was, and this is a testament to what we're doing on our shift, is we hired a couple new people, the floaters on our 24s, to accommodate Kelly days for some people. And it's been said twice by some of the new people, I really like working on C shift because we do stuff. Mm-hmm. It's so important to get out there and get these. And these two people in particular, one very new. Like he works for another department. And when I had my structure fire on Monday, he was there with another department too. And he came walking up to say hi, and he's still got his intern shield on his helmet. So he's green as a grass, man. but I mean, for him to say, you know what? I like working on C shift because of stuff like this. Well, he's got water running down his head after spraying water and, you know, turning ceiling tiles into Frisbees with 150 PSI. You know, it makes me feel good that people now want to come to this shift or look forward to working on it, because we're going to do some shit.
Right. I don't understand people that don't want to train. And if you come to our job, if you do our job and you don't want to train, you're kind of a bag of shit, in my opinion, because that means one of two things. One, you think you know it all, which I don't know anybody that knows it all. Or two, you're just trying to use our job as a day off for maybe another job.
Absolutely.
So, I've been a bag of shit, in the fire department before. I've done that before. I've made sure that the recliners didn't float up to the ceiling. I've done that. But it's our job. I mean, it's like, having a dentist that hates dealing with teeth. It doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely.
But you said something early I want to ask you about, and this was not planned by any means, but it made me think about something. So you said you got transferred onto another shift you didn't want to go. So a couple of years ago, and I don't know where I land on this conversation. So I've been an admin and I've been obviously on the floor, but they did a bunch of moves. They moved probably 20, 30 people, if not out of an 80 people department. So this made people very mad. So what I heard was, they don't have the right to move me. I've been here forever. I heard a lot of entitlement. Mm-hmm. So I was like, having come up in the fire service, I went where I was told. I didn't question it. Never. Yeah. So I was coming at it from that aspect. Now I'm not saying that's correct. So I'm kind of flying by wire here. So I was kind of like put off by this. I'm like, you go where you're told to go. This is a job. If McDonald's says you're doing fries today, you're doing fries today. Mm-hmm. But then the more I thought about it, the more I saw morale plummeting, right? So then looking at the moves individually, you could see there was a pattern of trying to help certain people that maybe were very, very good friends with the Chiefs.
Yeah.
You know, and I started looking at that pattern. I was like, okay, I can see where they're upset with that, because to your point, why move a problem when you can fix a problem? So if you're moving somebody because you don't want to deal with the problem, eat a bunch of puppet dicks, because that don't make sense. That's not good leadership. So then a guy said, and this is the part that got me. So I'm still on the fence with all this. So maybe you can walk me through it. But then a guy said, you know what? Why do we bid on spots per the contract if we don't get to stay in those spots until we want to be moved?
Okay.
I started thinking, and I'm like, you know what? That is actually a very, very good point. All this to say, I'm still kind of on the fence, but I think where I'm leaning is, if you got good leadership and you got good Chiefs, moving people like that for the betterment of the department, truly for the betterment of the department, not using that phrase, but truly, you know, doing that, I think is good. But if you're using it to punish people or nepotism just to help your friends out, it's kind of fucked up. So I'm working through this. Tell me what you think.
Well, I think there's some truth to that. And with you mentioning that, I kind of, that casts a different way of looking at that I should consider, you know, and that's a great thing about having a network of people that have like minds. You know, with you bringing up that point, I start to look at myself as maybe being selfish, you know, and I can be that way sometimes. I had full disclosure. I think if I could go back, and maybe I will, I'm going back right now, and analyze the situation. I think that if Chief maybe would have pitched it to me a little bit better and saying, hey, listen, we've got an issue. Number one, we've got these guys aren't getting along. And I know the two guys, and I'm like, fucking grow up, you two. Seriously, grow up. All right. But the other angle, you know, saying, hey, listen, the guys over on C shift are a little green and we need to move some people around. This is why we're doing this, you know, and, you know, maybe stroke me a little bit. Maybe that might help, you know, and I do have a very good relationship with my chief where I can go in his office, close the door, and without being punished, he can tell me, hey, keep it down. The walls are thin in here.
You know,
I can drop a couple F-bombs and he can throw an F-bomb right back at me. And I'm okay with that. Yeah. Because, you know, I think he understands where sometimes my spirit comes from. It's coming from the right place. And I try to make it come from the right place as opposed to being looking at as being confrontational, being pompous, and being self-serving. And I've never really been on that end of things as far as HR is concerned. So I don't have
knock on wood quick.
Dude, I tell you what, we could talk about that. I love what I'm doing right now and I love being at that front line, but you can never say never, right?
Right.
You know? But I don't know. I think that makes sense when you are bidding for positions. Why bid for something when a year from now they're going to send me? You know, and I think that we have to sit down and have a conversation with admin saying, okay, we are bidding for these things, but why am I going to bid for this just to be sent someplace else? Now, on the flip side of that, if I'm the one bidding, maybe I should have the mindset of, okay, so I'm going to station two. Station two has all the guys I like to work with. They specialize on things that I'm very interested in. Why do I want to go there only to have my heart broken in a year or two and be sent to station nine on the outskirts of town where it's basically a retirement home and the call volume is less and we go out for an occasional CO alarm every now and then and maybe we get called over to help station four because you know, they need a RIT team and we're just going to be yard gnomes and stand in the front yard, you know, stuff
yard
like
gnomes.
But I think you bring up a really good perspective on that. I've never looked at that way before.
So I'll tell you, it's so confusing because there's so many variables to make it worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And if you have shit leaders and you're doing it to make your buddies, you know, go to a different place, that's one thing.
Yeah.
So I have a friend in California, a very good friend of mine, and their department, they bid, I want to say every year for new job, everybody's moved. Yeah. If you have, and I may be getting this wrong, but I believe what it is if you have seniority and you're, say, a captain, chances are you get to stay where you want to stay if that's what you want, right? So it does a couple of things. It takes out the nepotism because it happens every year or every 2 years. Uh-huh. So everybody knows they're getting moved, and it's part of the job. It just so there's hardly any complaining. And if you want to stay somewhere, it encourages you to gain seniority, gain a little rank, put in a little effort. So I think that is a good thing. Here's the way in a perfect world, good leadership or bad leadership, if you moved every pipeman or backstep or what do you want to call them, you moved them every year. Then you moved your sergeant every 2 years, and you moved your captain every 3 years. Everybody's is learning a different part of the town, a different part of the trucks, different level, because sometimes it's industrial, sometimes it's near the river. And then you're maintaining that continuity on the truck. You have people there every two, that stay there at least 2 years, that know the roads, they know the hydrants, they know the businesses. Mm-hmm. But, it's so different than when I came on. When I came on, it was like, hey, you're going here. And I would have never thought of going to my chief and saying, well, this ain't right, or I don't like this. There was one person I worked with who was very new as a lieutenant, and he was living a busy house. Great fireman. He likes to fight fire. He likes to get in it. But he was moved to a slower place. He was a brand new lieutenant, right? All he did was complain. And he would come to me and complain. And I'm like, at some point, it switches from me being a friend to me having to be the training officer and kind of support admin. And some way, I'm like, look, here's what I'm hearing. Let's call him Larry. So here's what I'm hearing, Larry. I'm hearing eyes. I deserve this. I want to be here. I want to do this. I don't like this crew. Whatever it is. Yeah. I said, you need to be thinking we's. So my new thing is everybody's talking about pronouns now. So now I've got a firefighter pronoun. And my firefighter pronoun is they, them. That's what we need to think about. That's every decision we make in the fire service.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. That's my firefighter pronouns. Has nothing to do with sex or my gender. That's none of your damn business. Stay out of it. But for firefighters, doesn't that make sense? If you think about it, that's our job. So if you, when I hear a bunch of me's and I's, I get, I'm like, it's like record scratch. I'm like, yeah, I know it's a complicated issue. I don't know there's a great way to do it, but I think if you know you're being moved, I think if there's a good solid reason, like for you, they know you like to train, they know that you're a hard charger. Put you with some new guys. I get it. But why couldn't that be temporary? Why couldn't they say, hey, BJ, listen, we've got these green guys, we're going to put you over there for about a year. You do this favor for us, you get to go wherever you want. That way they've stroken you a little bit, but it's honest, right? And they're giving you a why, and they're giving you an exfil. That seems like it'd be a better idea. I don't know. Complicated issue.
I think you're onto something. I really do. Thank you. Thank you, Jake.
See, and now I don't think anybody would ever expect you to come to the firehouse and go, hey, you want to know my pronouns? They're like, BJ's talking. You say, my firefighter pronouns. It's they, them, bro. They, them.
Yeah.
So, searching off the line, it's funny because some people think that it's like VEIS or VES. It's some advanced thing. It's not. It's the right thing. Why don't we train more on that? And, like the VES thing, I've had so many people tell me, man, that's an advanced skill. No, it's not. It's literally going through a window and searching. Or I've been told, it's just a one-story building. We don't need to worry about VES. I'm like, bro, you can do quick on the VES. It's window-initiated search. Think of it that way. It's a window-initiated search. Do your fucking job and don't – what is it? The guy that runs FDTN, Jim McCormack, he says there's no he's like, there's no advanced skills. There's only mastery of the basics. And brother, that's it. And I've had, think about this. When's the last time, and I don't know, I'm just asking, when's the last time you've done bunker drills?
So it's been a while. I do mask up drill every day before shift. I do it three times. But as far as like a bunker, I couldn't tell you, man, unless I'm working with probies. Exactly. Unless I'm working with Kobe's, you know.
But listen to this. It's been a while. This makes sense. So every person that died in a fire, before they died, about 10 to 15 seconds before they died, they were alive, right? So we should view it as taking time off our clock and giving it to our victims. How do we do that? It's not going to be driving fast. Driving fast has been proven not to really do any good. I'm not saying don't drive on purpose. How can you serve them if you're in a car wreck? But we can, but if we get to the rig quickly and if we get our gear on quickly. So I was having this conversation with some people I was working with, and they're not real receptive. And I'm like, listen, you should be doing bunker drills. Well, we're not newbies. I'm like, okay, I watch you guys. I've done it. You know, you get a run come in and you move a little faster when it comes in as confirmed fire, but you move there and then, you know, you take your sweatshirt off and then you get in your gear slowly off the truck. Then you get in and they're like, yeah. I'm like, what if you practice bunker drills, not on the ground like you do as a recruit, but like put your stuff where it always is on the truck. And then the bunker drill starts from the time your captain's, you know, you say the captain's doing the drill. You go in the bedroom, like you're in bed. Okay. And you say, go, and you actually do it. And you go to your truck and you really try to put it on quickly. Right. Then you do that 3 or 4 times. You'll notice that you probably gained 2 or 3 seconds, right? You do that drill enough, then you've gained probably 10, 15, 20 seconds, which means you're putting that those 10 seconds on that victim's clock. So all this to say is, yeah, everybody looks at bunker drills as a new thing, a new people thing, but it's not. We should be doing that just like you do mask up drills. Bravo. But doing all that, doing it real world, meaning starting the bathroom, starting the kitchen, starting the bedroom, change places and moving the purpose. So I'm telling these people this, right? I'm like getting really passionate. And I'm like, look, guys, do me a favor. Just today, whenever you get a run, I don't care what it is, move with purpose. And try to put your gear on as fast as you can to get on the truck quicker. Just try it. And they're like, and don't make fun of it. Don't make it a joke, because if one of you makes a joke about it, the rest of you won't do it. And they're like, can him hang around? I swear to you, BJ, it wasn't an hour later. They got a run, and the captain comes out just like he normally does. Hurry up, guys! We got to put our gear on. We got to do this. And he's making fun of the whole process. And I was just like, okay, you know, and that's talk about his pronouns. His pronouns was me, right? He didn't want to try to do it probably because he was embarrassed, right? But that's putting his ego into play as opposed to taking it out and doing what's best for the people, the community he serves. I really think you need to be doing bunker drills pretty often. I think you need to do it realistically, and you got to look at putting time on their clock. And if you're not doing that, again, eat a bag of puppet dicks. If you're not thinking of them, eat a great big old bag of puppet dicks. Off, because for listening, we had a little Wi-Fi issue. You had to switch over to a phone. When we last we left off, we were talking puppet dicks and how lazy. So,
yeah, is that different than Muppet dicks?
Oh, totally, totally. Okay. Yeah, I mean that's Muppet. I like that coffee mug, by the way.
Oh, nice. Thanks.
Got Star Wars, the cool brother.
Thing about it is you put the coffee in the lightsaber with the amount of coffee and the heat, got the color that comes up. So as I drink it, the saber goes down. So
you're living in year 3000, bro. You're just flexing. You're flexing, bro. Flexing on all that Skrilla you got. All right, let's see. Well, we were talking about bunker drills, and I think they're overlooked. Yeah. I love that you do mass drills every day, because that's the same thing. I love Kyle Romagus's view on it, and you know, the zero second mask up drill.
Yeah.
And it's not for everybody, it's not for every situation. I have done it, I like it. If it's a confirmed car fire, structure fire, and you know, you're going in immediately, you're not second or third or whatever, putting your mask on, have everything on, and practice that way too. Practice pulling a hose, practice working hard to see how bad it fogs up. Try some of the anti-fogging stuff. But, you know, I see this all the time where people are taking so much time in the front yard getting ready. Some of them are great. Some of them are super fast. But again, can we put seconds on their clock by doing this? Then I hear, well, you know, I can't see as well. Kind of fogs up. Well, if you work with that, You know, some of the newer masks are really good at it, not fogging, some are, but it doesn't matter. Maybe try forcing doors in training with a fogged up mask. Maybe learn to do that stuff. And maybe pulling lines, doing all that thing. Anything we can do to put seconds on their clock again. I keep saying that because I'm pretty passionate about it. If it was your kids, you would want that firefighter to come off with a charged hose line. So, you know, what's different about us versus them, right? So why do we not train that way? And one of the best things I ever saw, I say there's a culture in the Pacific Northwest in firefighting that is amazing. Every time I go out there, it's I see consistently, and I see it I see it like honestly. They really are citizens first type of people. So I was teaching this class out there, and there was a fire marshal, right? Big guy, but he's a fire marshal. He's not riding the trucks. So we were doing live fire training, and I looked at his mask, and it had two huge keychains on the temple straps, right? Oh. Two huge keychains.
Oh.
And I looked at it, and I said, "What's that for?" He goes, "Oh, that's I practice my mask up drills with my gloves on." And he's a fire marshal. Yep. He doesn't go into burning buildings right now. And I'm like blown away. I'm like, Jay, that guy gets it.
He's not a fire marshal. He's a firefighter.
Brother, that's it. That's the truth. That is, amen. You're right. And I love being around that kind of stuff. I'm mad at myself for not thinking of it, but I love being around people that give a shit about their job. And I cannot stand, if you've listened to this podcast any amount of time, anybody's listening, they know, everybody knows I was a bag of shit. I own up to it. And part of my penance is doing this podcast and talking to other people. I'm retired, and I'm going up to Detroit next week for a class, a TIC class. And it's also a live fire class, which is awesome. I won't be able to participate too much because of my damn knees. I just got shots in my knees, so I can't do a whole lot, but I'm going, you know, because I care. I don't know when I'm going to be called back to do anything.
Yeah.
And I wish more people had the right idea of that stuff. Now, I've derailed you so much. We haven't even talked about any things we were supposed to talk about. We talk a little bit.
We're talking shop, buddy. It doesn't bother me.
I love talking fire department shit. It's amazing. When I say I retire, people say, you know, you retire from the fire service. I'm like, no, you never retire from the fire service. I'm retired from the fire department. Mm-hmm. I'm still heavily invested in the fire service, teaching and everything else. But the three tenets of 3-point firefighter, prior training, physical fitness, I think physical fitness is one of the most important things you can do. I think that one subject makes you a better firefighter across the board. And I think I could argue that pretty well. You're a big proponent of physical fitness. What is your view on it? I mean, like, are you saying you have to be in the best shape, like an athlete? You have to be, you know, do marathons and all this shit. What is your idea of being physically fit for a firefighter?
I think much like you talking about the 3 points of 3-point firefighter, I don't think there's one particular line item that a firefighter or EMT or even law enforcement for that matter, really play into being fit for duty. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been brought up a couple of times in the particular way of, well, you know what, you know, it doesn't matter if you can bench press a house, you know, it takes more than that to be a firefighter.
I can do that, by the way.
What's that?
I can do that. I can do that.
No, dude.
Yeah,
so jacked.
I'm fucking yoked, bro. I'm yoke AF.
I heard that saying, you know, so what? Big deal if you can bench press a house. And I've worked with a couple of younger guys that know that I'm into fitness. And hey, you know what? Did you hear I benched this much stuff? And that's great. That is fine, you know. But I've come to the point. This was 2 years ago. I said this to this guy. I said, you know what? That's great that you can bench press a house, but I guess I'd rather you bench press a mobile home and be able to, you know, conserve
endurance.
Your care, be have a cardiovascular level, have a good head on your shoulders, because you know as well as I do, you can have the best conditioned person in the world, but as soon as you involve stress into what they're doing, whether it be, holy shit, I got flames over my head, or, oh my God, I got to force this door and I got the engine crew right behind me waiting to get in, or, oh my God, it's a pulseless non-breather, and I got to carry this bag 40 feet from the ambulance up to the door, and now I've got to do compressions, okay? Mm-hmm. All that stuff is kind of out the door. So, yes, you should have a particular level of strength. Yes, you should definitely have a particular level of cardiovascular capacity. Number two, though, I'm going to bring this into the fitness arena. You've got to have that mental conditioning as well, you know, and that comes with training. You know, you're not going to stress out and pick up your heart rate if you're well versed in forcing a door. That's going to be the least of your worries. Hold on, man. Inward swinging door. Stand back. Adds in. Pow. 10% surge. All right, boys. I just did a look in there. I got flames down the hall on the right. Go get them. Okay. That's the least of your worries. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that automatically brings everything down. The another thing about fitness is, you know, and you're going through this right now. What's your quality of life going to be after retirement?
Absolutely. You got to think long term. Yes.
Absolutely. If you don't take care of yourself, doing what we do, you're going to come across incidences where you're going to hurt yourself. We see this with professional athletes. Earl Campbell. You're familiar with who Earl Campbell is, correct?
No, but I'm going to pretend like I do because I don't know anything about sports.
Okay.
And I've got a couple patented answers that I will use, and you will not know that I do not know the first fucking thing about sports. So go ahead, ask that question again.
So you know who Earl Campbell is, correct?
Name one person that doesn't, brother.
Fair enough.
See, there you go.
But anyways, those of us who don't know, Earl Campbell was probably one of the most punishing running backs in NFL history.
Amen.
And he just, God, this guy was just an animal. But to kind of get to the point, when he does, last time I saw a number of interviews that he did, he had to ride in a cart to go everywhere. He had to sit on a tailgate of his truck to do an interview because his knees were so horrible. Now, that being said, athletic trainers are much different, and sports training is much different now than it was back in the 90s and the 80s and the late 70s, early 80s when he played. But my point being, you take care of yourself while you're doing the job, you're going to evade some of those injuries that you may be left with when you leave the job. I have a lot of hobbies that required me to be mobile. I like to hunt. I like to fish. All right. I got to climb trees, pull boats, row, stuff like that. I'm not going to be able to do that if I don't condition my shoulders or my legs, you know, end up tearing a shoulder and losing mobility in it where I can't draw back a bow, where I can't row or anything like that. And that's gonna rob some of my joy. Bringing it back to what we're doing right now in present tense, the people that we serve expect athlete-like performance.
Yep.
Okay? And if you think that everybody that shows up to your house to address your emergency is going to find themselves on a goddamn calendar every year because they're ripped, they are physically able to do the job, they can grab that 24 or even that 35 and carry it by themselves up to the front door, they're going to crawl in that window and grab somebody and pull them up by themselves, I got news for you. You are about to be sadly mistaken and disappointed.
Oh, yeah.
But that's
absolutely
what they expect of us. That's what they expect of us.
They one of the big, and I've talked about this before on here, so I apologize if I bring it up too much, but there was a time that what really got me, I was already pretty flipping passionate, but then I got even more so when I was sitting in my office one day, and I had my office was as big as a closet, honestly. It's teeny tiny, but I loved it. I love my office. But it was one whole wall of glass looking out. And one morning, I was just looking out, watching the main traffic as people were going to work. And I thought to myself, I'm like, they have an expectation of any situation they get in. If they get their dick caught in a toaster, if they have a run into a train, if their house blows up, they have this knowledge, this feeling in their heart, soul, whatever you got, that we are going to solve any problem they get into. They don't even worry about it. They go to bed at night thinking we've got them. And the truth of it is, not all of us do. We don't. And that was a big aha moment for me. So I had to I had to find where I was lacking and start boosting those. And I come back to it pretty often. Not too long ago, I guess it was about February, I brought it back around again. I'm like, you know what? I know I'm getting ready to retire. You know, I'm at least off right now, medical. I need to think about that again. And I had to reframe it. And that was a big aha moment for me. I think when it comes to physical fitness, so the question becomes, you know, strength, cardio, but I think it's both. I think it's a good combination of both. I got to be trained as a physical fitness instructor for the fire department, yep, me and three other people. Mm-hmm. And it's through the IAFF, so it's for us. And what I loved about it, it wasn't anything crazy, and it could take somebody from no shape to good shape. Yep. But it mentioned, like, day one, it mentioned exactly what you just said. It said, this is not only for, you know, the citizens community and yourself, this is for your long-term retirement. Mm-hmm. We want you to be physically fit to do all the stuff you want to do when you retire. Mm-hmm. And that kind of blew me away. I'm like, I had no idea that, you know, health and wellness has come a long way in the fire service. And for that program to mention it like that, and then you just brought it up, and like, my knees are shot right now. I've been able to run for a long time. I mean, I run, but I can't run like I used to. Well, I just got my shots in yesterday, so I'm kind of hoping to get back into that. But it's always on my mind. I'm always working towards that. So what is a reason to not work out? I can't think of one, you know, other than maybe somebody's embarrassed, maybe somebody doesn't know anything about it. I don't know, but honestly, it doesn't really fucking matter when you think of it this way. You need to be in better shape. You need to train. You need to do all these things for them, right? And if you're not doing that, I've got bags of puppet dicks. I'm so, you know, I get so mad thinking about these people that come to work and it's their day off. I can't stand it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care if you're paid or you're volunteer. Mm-hmm. You know, if you got the t-shirt, especially if you wear that t-shirt off duty, brother, earn it. If you're a fat piece of shit and you're wearing that t-shirt around, stop it. Just stop it. Yeah. You know, and then you look at your RIT team, and if your RIT team's garbage, how does that make you feel? Right. Yeah. And I'm learning, I'm rethinking my RIT big time anymore. Because I feel like it could be a wasted resource for a smaller department. It's great to have for us, but now with, you know, the firefighter survey, the rescue survey, Brian Brush and everything, we're learning that firefighters, we're victims are for one, which helps us hone in our skills, mm-hmm, and our target. But also we're learning that some of these maydays are being solved by people already in this building.
Absolutely. Right?
So let's take those yard gnomes, mm-hmm, love it, and let's put them inside, mm-hmm, moving lines, searching for people, because only two things are going to help them, and that's us getting to them quicker,
yep,
and or the fire going out. Mm-hmm. So get them out of there holding up nothing. Put them inside. Yeah. Are you going to have a RIT team? No, you're not. Is it dangerous? Yeah, it is. But I feel like for departments with smaller resources, it is an absolute must that you get more people inside. I just think that.
Well, here's my stance on it. So being a member of the Bruce City chapter, Bruce City Fools, here in Wisconsin, we do a lot of RIT stuff, sometimes twice a year. Typically once a year, we do a RIT under fire. And you know as well as I do, as you've already articulated, that it's not the RIT team that are making these rescues. You know, you look at the numbers, they're making, last time I checked, less than 8% of these RIT rescues. Who's making the rescue? Self-rescue? Okay, your crew, if you get in trouble, is rescuing you, or just another crew that's inside. And when these training opportunities come up, whether it be me saying, hey, just let you guys know, Bruce City Fools is doing a training in such and such day and RIT under fire, bless you. Hey, tonight we're going to work on, or next week, Monday, we're going to work on RIT skills. People are like, you know, because number one, it's a lot of work. RIT, mm-hmm, is a lot of work. And number two, they think right away, well, yard gnomes, I'm going to be standing in the front yard, got my hook here, going to stand around and do nothing.
Right.
But looking at those numbers, I tell everybody, RIT skills are not just for the RIT team. And I show them these numbers. Everybody wants to be on the nozzle, okay, as an example. there's a pretty good chance if shit goes down, which if I remember correctly from, what was it? There was a study, just Google it, Mayday, it's an older article, 2015, Line of Duty Deaths, Mayday, Myth versus Reality. A lot of those RIT incidents happen within the first 15 minutes. They happen before they have an actual incident commander established. It's with a working command.
Right.
And in that 15 minutes, who's on the fire scene? Your first due crew, that nozzle crew going in, or that search crew. Those people are going to be the ones that are going to be doing that rescue. So it would behoove us, if we're first, if we'd like to be on the nozzle, if we're on that first due crew, if we're on the second due, okay, that we know those skills. Because I think the mindset is changing that we got people inside already. And yes, it I've heard from a lot of veterans that typically it's going to take more than one RIT crew to remove somebody. Okay. But that being said, hey, anybody who's a thinking firefighter, a thinking officer is going to go, I already got guys inside. Okay. And they're there and they got the nozzle and they're going to be able to have the opportunity to protect themselves from a fire incident while trying to get Breacher's dumbass, you know, out of the hole in the floor. We've already got people there. We know where he's at. We got somebody that can communicate him. Okay. Let's keep those guys there to get this RIT thing going, and let's move another crew towards them, okay, and have that initial crew handle that incident initially. You talk to guys like the Movers and Shakers, the RIT people of the world, you know, Rob Ramirez, Babe Ibrahim, guys like that, that are taking that RIT concept and tweaking it a little bit, and it makes all the sense in the world. So, again, that mindset of, RIT isn't just for the RIT team. We should all be well-versed in RIT skills.
So that's part one with BJ Breacher. Check back next Monday for part two. It gets even better. Hey, do me a favor. If you like the podcast, please drop me a like and a subscribe and check out my YouTube channel and TikTok channel and my Facebook page. All 3-Point Firefighter. Today's podcast was sponsored by Fire Facilities, industry-leading designers and manufacturers of realistic, built-to-last training structures for more than 30 years. Make your training count. Visit firefacilities.com for more information.